I want to take a minute and talk about ShopBoss. It's the ultimate solution for automotive shop management. It's built by industry experts with real-world experience. In fact, the founder was a former shop owner himself. Now, ShopBoss is designed to be user-friendly, making it easy to set up, learn, and teach your team. With Boss Pay, powered by 360 Payments, enjoy integrated payments with digital signature capture, text-to-text pay, PayPal, and Venmo options, consumer financing, and now surcharging, all seamlessly integrated into ShopBoss. Say goodbye to the hassle of managing separate sets of books. Everything you need is built right in. But that's not all. ShopBoss also offers built-in DVI functionality, eliminating the need for third-party solutions. See how they can simplify your auto shop at shopboss.net/gearbox. shopboss.net/gearbox. That's shopboss.net/gearbox. My name is Jimmy Purdy, shop owner, master tech, transmission builder, and the host of the Gearbox Podcast. Here I talk with new and seasoned shop owners, as well as industry professionals about day-to-day operations within their own shops and all the failures and successes that come along the way. From what grinds your gears to having to shift gears in the automotive industry, this is the Gearbox Podcast. You are?
I am Chris Johnson. I'm a shop foreman, technician at Coburg Mazda in Coburg, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, that's cool. That's a different animal up there.
That it is, yeah. Having to deal with all the rust and snow and slush. And
I guess not. I mean, do you have the being able to see the difference between the two? Have you been like, because sometimes it's like, I'm in California, right? So I don't know anything about the Rust Belt. I've never had to deal with it. I've just seen horror stories, but I've never personally had it. So I can't like from experience be like, oh, it's so much better here. It's just, it is what it is. So I assume like when you're up there, it's like, that's just your life. So you're like, I don't know. This is just what we deal with. This is just what we do.
It kind of is. You just get used to it. And as I think on one of the other podcasts, Mario Rojas was talking about, you know, embracing the suck with working on BMWs. That's what we do with the rest. Just embrace the suck and make it work.
Embrace the suck. Yeah, exactly. You don't have much of a choice, huh?
No, it's a rust is a way of life.
So you own a shop up there?
I am the shop foreman, lead technician of a small Mazda dealership here in Coburg.
Oh, that's cool. How is life like that? How is that going?
Going a lot better.
Okay.
You know, you're coming up as a technician, you know, you get the, you know, the shit jobs and, you know, as the jadedness and whatnot. And but once I make the industry work a lot better and working a lot better with my managers and with other technicians and learning how to work with them better and learning more about the business itself, especially through like the Chain of the Industry podcast and, you know, with listening to everyone else's stories, it's becoming a whole lot better. Like life is better because making it better.
But yeah. One conversation at a time, I guess is what they say. Huh?
Yeah.
How's that transition going from technician to manager? Is that fairly new for you?
That is fairly new. Just been more, been slowly working at it for the last little couple of years, more mentoring the other technicians. You're such a small dealership. There's myself and one other technician, and we have two apprentices, and that's our hoists taken up right there.
Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty small dealership, huh? Yeah.
But having to oversee the work of the other guys and, you know, make sure they're learning, they're doing their jobs correctly, we're not getting comebacks, and, you know, so that's a steep learning curve, but it's, you know, it's like being a parent.
Yeah, I've come to that same exact conclusion at some points. I feel like that you got to think like that a little bit, but then also realize that they're not your kids. So it's like
you can let them go a little further on that leash until they say, now, should you really be doing this?
And an extent, I know a lot of guys are probably like, what are you talking about? I'm not like that. No, we're not like talking about every technician out there, but how's the turnover rate at the dealership? I mean, I feel like obviously it's a different market. It's got to be a different marketplace than down here in the States, but they seem to be leaving the dealership in groves. I get a lot of interviews from guys from the dealership. With that being said, I feel like a lot of them use that just as like a bargaining tactic. Like, hey, I got this job with this guy down the street. And then, you know, the manager or whatever goes in, hey, okay, I'll give you your $5 an hour raise or whatever you're asking for. I see a lot of that in our area. I don't know if they're just trying to get more money and they're asking for raises and they don't know another way other than locking a job down somewhere else and using that as threatening, or if they're just really sick of the environment and a little bit more money kind of smooths that out.
Yeah, again, we've kind of seen that. Our shop hasn't been that bad because, like, we've had one apprentice. He's been there for, I want to say, like, almost 3 years. He was a co-op student. So from the high schools, they can send students out to get work experience. So we've had him since he was in high school, then been bringing him up. And we got our other technician who's just recently been licensed as a technician. He's been there for going on 2 years, like a year and a half, 2 years, and he's growing well with us. We've had, you know, the average turnover, I'd say, before that, but we're trying to, you know, weed out.
You're a pretty small dealership, though, so you probably don't have too much to...
Yeah, we don't notice it as much.
Lost in the minutia, yeah.
Yeah. I always see ads for other dealerships in town that are advertising all the time, but they're the ones that are always advertising.
Yeah, you always know the shops that are always advertising. You always can tell.
For a reason. They got a revolving door for a reason.
Usually for a reason. Yeah. Are you part of the process when it comes to, like, the pay rates and, like, looking at raises or training? Do you have a lot to say when it comes to that kind of stuff as far as, like, the manager role?
As far as the pay raises and whatnot, no. Like, I'm still a working shop foreman, so.
Okay.
Being that we're, you know, incredibly tiny. In the hiring process and the training, I've just started getting into that, and I'm going to start implementing a training plan for us or for our techs besides what our manufacturer offers, because the courses aren't as prevalent as we'd like them to be. So I'm going to start working with our apprentices and technicians and start getting them learn more, like, what are the weak areas? What do they want to learn? What are they interested in? Let's get a program going for that just so they can work a lot better and efficiently without me having to mind them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about programs. Well, is there a certain program that you working on right now?
Well, I think I'd like to get them all signed up for Scanner Danner initially, because I think that would help everyone for getting our fundamentals. I mean, I'm still a premium member. I think for the last couple of years, I just keep going back, rewatching some of the stuff and refreshing stuff, and it's
amazing how many free resources are out there that no one really takes advantage of too when it comes to technicians. And I mean every aspect of it, right? I mean, I don't know, do you feel like, I feel like there's, like, a lot that's out there where it's they kind of point you in the wrong direction, and unless you get on the right train to begin with, you feel like you kind of got, you know, the short, I don't know, you get taught something, then you realize everybody's against that certain, I don't know, that certain aspect or that certain mind process, right?
Yeah.
But then it's like, but you're so involved in it because you've watched so many videos and so much education about it, you're like, oh, but I really liked what that guy was.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're kind of doing the wrong thing. And so it's just hard to navigate because there's so much out there now. But when you find the right stuff, it's like, man, if it's free, like, just watch it. What's the harm?
Yeah, you can always certainly go down a rabbit hole of, as you say, just finding this. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's good. It's great. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy's a fucking kook.
But, you can tell right away, like, that's a Scotty Kilmer. I'm not going to watch that one anymore.
Nope.
I don't need someone to tell me that one's bad. I've been watching a lot of Masterclass lately. I got that subscription at the beginning of the year. And so, I've been non-automotive training for my own personal growth, I think, is really important too when it comes to, like, teaching people or, like, leading people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a really good idea. I like that.
I don't know. Just, you can't learn everything from, like, the same couple of people. You got to keep finding new avenues of learning. And it's like just listening to some completely different aspect. I mean, I feel like the scientist stuff is always something I'm interested in. I think as, like, technicians, we're all kind of like scientists in a way. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Our process and our hypothesis. And it's like, and so listening to like Neil deGrasse Tyson is like, he's just like, that guy is so smart on so many levels. And it's like, I don't know. I was just listening to him, but he was talking about how he takes the scientific method and he's always trying to find a theory and then a hypothesis. And I'm like, man, you kind of sound like a daily a day at the shop, you know?
Yeah.
We take something, yep. We got to theorize and we got to think about what it is and then sell a hypothesis on a quote. And then we're like repairing this and then we got to actually do the mechanical part of it. But I think to be like an A-level technician, you have to have that scientific process, right? Like it's not just hanging parts. You're like going through a diagnostic process in your mind. You just look at cars. You look at everything differently once you get to that level.
Yeah. Why am I hanging this part? Why is this doing this? Why is that? That's why I love the why. Why.
Yep. I think that's part of the whole process that he was talking about. It was like taking that why. And it's like, you always have to be curious. But it's frustrating too, though. You know, you get like something comes in. It's like a 2019 or 2020 RAM with like a communication code. And you're like, why? It's all about the tone of voice, you know? Well, you could be like, oh, why? Right? All curious and inquisitive. And it's like, or the why? Why am I doing this on this thing? I don't know anything about this damn. Yeah, exactly. Pulling your damn hair out. Like, I don't want to figure this out. But you have to keep that curiosity to be a good technician.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure you've probably been wrenching for a while. As far as the diagnostic side of it, was that something you kind of moved into as you moved into the manager position, or was it something that you just wanted to be a manager, or what was your why when it comes to that?
Well, the diagnostic stuff, I think that started like a few years ago, like when you realize, you know, I'm hanging parts, you know, that's, you know, feeding my family, feeding my belly, but I'm, you know, then you're just craving the paycheck, craving the hours on that rather than, you know, feeding your mind and whatnot. And have an actual, like a, satisfaction with the job, whereas you can dig through a problem that no one else could find, then boop, there it is, and you can at least be happy at the end of the day, solving puzzles, like, or putting puzzles together, just find out what the picture is.
I turned my mic, there we go. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, being able to, I mean, that's the good and bad part. It's like the frustrating part when you don't get it right.
Yeah,
but it's like that. That elation of like, yeah, figuring out. I don't know. That's such a hard thing. It's like you want to be the guy that everyone brings their problems to, but you don't want to be the guy that everyone brings their problems to.
Yeah.
Why am I like this? Why am I wired this way?
Yeah, I think with my finding that stuff out, I've been liking to impart that on our other technicians and whatnot, or and other people. So that's why I've been trying to move up to the more managing role, especially as I get older, because I'm just rounded 40. So I want to be able to ease into the end goal or the next phase of life.
Yeah.
Rather than having to pound out hours constantly.
Yeah, working with your mind instead of your hands a little more.
Yeah.
Then how's the satisfaction being like kind of cultivating a culture and like managing people?
That is actually really nice, especially with our one young and up and coming apprentice. He's like a mini me. I can teach him some stuff and he's got it, and I can just set him on autopilot and just you know, looking across the shop, I know exactly, you know, what phase of the job he's at, how he can do stuff, and he can just ground and pound stuff, or he can, you know, knows what questions to come and ask me when he needs to.
It's a rewarding, I for me, it was a really rewarding aspect of like moving into like the management or like the ownership position. And it's something I didn't really think about.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like fixing, instead of fixing cars, you're kind of like fixing people in a way, but it's just as frustrating.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but you can't, there's only so many times you can threaten with a rolled up newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, you find different ways of disciplining, I guess, in air quotes, disciplining. But the old ways, I'm sure the way you were raised in a shop is a lot different than the way the culture needs to be now. You know, I mean, so as far as like being brought up in the shop, was what was your kind of like your beginnings as far as like getting into it?
My beginnings, like my wrenching became out of necessity. I eventually wanted to work on cars because I wanted to go racing and didn't have money to pay anyone else to do it. And I wanted to know how to bring it on. So I had to fix my own cars and go racing. Then I turned that into a co-op just at the end of high school. Then I turned that into an apprenticeship and turned that into a career where I was actually working at a race shop for about 7 or 8 years until I had to get a real job. But,
yeah, so you went from like the performance just into like the actual bread and butter, trying to forward the next step, right?
Yeah, they co-op an apprentice at a dealership here in Coburg, actually literally right next to where I work right now. So that was almost 20 years ago. That was working on race shop. We were building up here to the Trans Am series. We build their two frame chassis, you know, NASCAR engine stuff. Fun stuff, lots of Corvettes and lots of traveling down the States for fun races, which was a lot of fun, especially as you're younger, but eventually it takes up all of your time.
Yeah, and you don't get any of the profit out of it either.
Yeah,
I've noticed that with the classics and the performances, like a lot of guys new in the industry, that's what they want to do until they realize there's no paycheck on the other side, which still blows me away. You know, like it's just strange when you talk about the classics, and whether it's a classic car or performance car, this is like expendable money. How is there no money for these skilled technicians to build these cars when it's not needed? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're dealing with the day to day, the soccer mom, the construction guy, just like, and you're trying your best to keep the bills down as much as they can because they need it. And it's like, just seems backwards to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a different world. So, especially the clientele we were dealing with at the race shop, it's, you know, they're operating on different levels. Like we had a lot of, you know, commercial real estate developers. Like they've got money to spend on this stuff. They're blowing 25, you know, if they're doing a pro weekend, they're spending probably $45,000, almost $50,000 for a weekend of racing.
Right.
Yeah, they may win, they may finish at the end, or they may wad it up.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely not for a paycheck. I mean, they might make a little bit of money, but at the end of the day, it's like, it's not what they use to go to work, you know? Yeah, it just blows me away, that kind of stuff. Because there is a lot of passion for that, to get in the race circuit. A lot of people start, that's where they start, is like getting on a race team it's always something that I wonder about, you know. I mean, I'd like to be able to just do performance stuff too, but anybody you talk to, once they get into the business of like restoring cars or doing LS swaps or doing all the fun stuff, building Baja trucks, it's like there's just no money at the end of it. And it's like, that's so strange.
Oh, yeah. That kind of does bog the mind.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
wrenching on those cars, you'd have to hopefully, you know, get into a bigger pro team than, you know, go to Europe, then you can kind of make some money and actually eke out a living. But then you're, you know, the team might shut down at the end of the year or the next year when the rules change, then you have to go find another job at a different series and keep traveling.
Yeah. So with the dealership, how's Mazda treat you? How do you like the outfit of actually Mazda? Because our Mazda dealership, it's not very good around here.
Oh, no.
We don't have one. Oh. So it's interesting out of the States with the different dealerships and how they operate. I mean, there's pretty strict rules with the ones in the States, at least, about having a certain number of staff in the service department to even be qualified as a dealership. And it's the structure of it's just totally different, I would imagine. I don't know the rules up in Canada, but just curious how Mazda is as far as parts in their cars and something that you see, you know, any issues that are common for you as far as the cars themselves or like the actual work atmosphere?
I know in our, like, at least in our little neck of the woods, don't see too many big problems, like, especially from Mazda head office end. They usually leave us alone.
That's nice.
Yeah, we don't get in trouble. keep to ourselves. We do just what we need to do, and actually we usually do perform a lot better than some of the other dealers in our group area, or actually
yeah,
in our province. So they tend to like us fairly well. But as far as corporate with other dealer issues, that I don't know too much about or haven't heard anything about. So I used to think no news is good news in that respect.
Well, that's always good. A hands-off approach is always nice when it comes to upper management. To an extent, I mean, does that kind of feel like keeps you out in left field a little bit? Like you'd prefer a little bit more? There's always that fine line of like micromanaging and then like the lack of management altogether.
No, I think we managed ourselves pretty well. Like from our dealership perspective, our owner, we meet their targets, and our general manager, he understands, what our service department can do or is doing, and he understands the struggles that we have, and he works well with us. We do a lot, or do well for him as well. I think we've got a very good team there. I mean, it might sound like saying, yay, Cobra Mazda, we're the best. I mean, we got problems, but we work through them, and everyone's got problems.
Yeah, the day-to-day problems is never going to get away from.
Oh, hell
no. I mean, like the hiring, like how's the tech shortage, in quotes, how's that tech shortage up in that area? Is that something you guys are struggling with too?
Not so much. I think in our town, there's only, as I think we said earlier, there's only the same dealers that seem to be hiring because they have a revolving door built onto the place, but they're hiring because no one wants to work there. And people work there and figure out, oh crap, should have done that.
When's the last time you had an opening at your place?
We just filled an apprenticeship program filled a position today. Actually, I think he just started today as an apprentice. But because the other apprentice we had, he's gone on to do different things. Just automotive wasn't for him and wants to pick a different career path.
Hmm.
But besides that, we hadn't hired anyone in about a year.
Okay.
At least in the service area.
But you don't have a problem finding someone, huh? And I guess you got a good apprentice program. That's one thing we need to get more of in like the independent shops, is a better apprentice program for indie shops. The dealers are doing pretty well when it comes to like bringing in someone with no experience, but it's so difficult. It's for me, being a specialty shop, I just can't, it's just hard. I mean, I hate saying I can't, right?
Yeah.
So you always can, but it's like, I don't know. Like, what do I do? Like, I can't put someone on a transmission job or, some of these big long-term jobs, but I'd love the idea of like these, like NAPA just came out with an apprentice program as well. And it's something I want to be hooked up with. But I mean, how does that work for you? Is that beneficial? Is it something that takes a lot of your time?
I think it's certainly beneficial up here. To be a technician, you have to be licensed. So you have to have gone to a trade school and gotten your hours in or your equivalent time in at school. Then you have to write your license, and then you can get your ticket or your actual license. But you have to be a registered apprentice in order to do that. So you have to be working at a shop registered as an apprentice. Then that's how you go to school, and that's how you get your license. So it's government mandated that you go through an apprenticeship program. But sometimes, as we all know, you could, you'd be an apprentice, but you're stuck in the lube rack for 3 years. You're not going to learn shit. Then you.
Government mandates. I don't know. I think that's a hot topic too for everything, right?
Oh yeah. And I think, the mandated is, maybe
I don't know.
Poor choice of words, but at least it's government backed. So at least your schooling that you have to go to is, at least when I did it, you need to do like day release, so one day a week, so you can still go to work. Then you go to school one day, but usually by the following week, you've forgotten literally everything you did the last week. Or you could go for, I think it's like two and a bit months. And when I went, my entire schooling for, so the, you know, 6-8 months or whatever of school over 3 years cost me $1,200, because the rest of it was subsidized by the government.
Well, that's a good thing,
least,
I guess.
So that's at least there's some support that way, but yeah. Making it a government rule is, yeah, as you say, iffy, but it's the same for literally every trade up here, and like nurses and whatnot too.
It's not a bad concept. I don't know if I like the government taking care of it, in a sense of like, anytime it becomes that, it's always for the right reasons, but then the wrong people get their hands on it.
Yeah. Usually because the people that want to be in charge are the wrong people to have in charge.
Yeah.
And usually make a mockery of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, they got it. Once someone becomes a job and it becomes a financial income for somebody, they have to figure out a way to continue that, you know, like, I gotta find a way to like keep my job, so I have to create fines or like funnel money or whatever they end up doing. But
yeah.
I like the idea of having. I mean, it's anybody could be a mechanic down here, a technician, and you can open a shop. You can put a sticker on the side of your van, go buy some tools at Harbor Freight, and all of a sudden you're a mobile technician, and that gets lumped into the same mobile technicians that, you know. Like Bernie Thompson, you watch Bernie Thompson, ATS.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's a mobile technician, right? And it's like, so that mobile technician is the same as the guy that just bought this van, put a sticker on the side and bought some Harbor Freight tools. And now he's out in the wilderness.
Yeah, just,
that's the same. Like, that's not the same, but there's no classification. Right. And it's like, so I like the idea of like, well, if we had some sort of certification program, that'd be great. You got the AAC program. That's fantastic. But it's such a poll. Everyone hates it or everyone likes it. I don't know. Like it's,
yeah. I find the fact that you can just walk in anywhere and be a mechanic with no formal training of any sort is terrifying, and call yourself a mechanic, or as I say, just grab some tools and say, yeah, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to be a mechanic today.
Yeah.
I find that utterly fucking terrifying, to be honest.
Yeah, and it goes over to the other trades too, but like the other trades don't go down the road at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. Into oncoming traffic with you and your kids going home from soccer practice.
Right. Yeah, you don't see the guest house going down the highway, you know, that's all. and nothing to say bad about any of the other trades, you know. I like to I like to have myself my morning ritual in a nice air conditioned working toilet, right? So it's like I'm totally about the other trades. Like, you guys do a great job, like, nothing, but yeah, like it's terrifying to think that someone can just go in there, put some ball joints in a wheel bearing on a 1990 Chevy with absolutely no certification behind them at all, or even if they're AAC certified, like, what does that really mean? You know, did someone take the test for them? Like, I don't know. I appreciate the AAC certification system just because it's that first layer of defense. You know what I mean? Like, it's at least, yeah, it's something.
It's like, I almost hesitate to say like a form of accountability, but it kind of is. You need some sort of liability or accountability on the person actually doing the work, which.
Well, it's at least someone cares enough to actually sit down for an hour and try to put the knowledge of what they're about to attempt on a piece of paper. You know, does it mean it's like it's the end all be all because you passed the A2, you're an automatic transmission expert? No. Like, you know, like I get that point. And I think that's like the hard pull between the two when it comes to education. It's like, oh, so just because you're AAC certified means you know everything. It's like, no. It just means like someone cares enough to try. And I think that's big, because it's like, at least it's like, I actually am going to take my time and like try to do this right and not just like knock this out and make my $200 and then go home and not worry about where that car is going after this.
Yeah.
Like, who, I don't know. And I don't know what else you could do. Like, what would be the next process other than having the government step in and make these mandates like you guys have up there? I mean, what would be the biggest, like, I haven't dealt with that, right? Like, I don't know what exactly they reach into as far as how deep into your pockets they pull when it comes to actually being certified. But when you hire a tech, what's that process look like? What do you have to actually verify?
As long as we get their license number, you can look up any technician or any licensed trade person. You can just go on. There is a website available. Punch in their name. You can see if they're certified, if it's or if they're they've paid their license fees. At least make sure they're current.
I see. So it's more or less about the money, keeping it certified. Is it? I mean, do they have to like recertify with a test or some sort of? I mean, every year is what's the update on it?
No, there isn't anything on it. As long as you keep paying your fee, which is with tax $67.80 every year. So it's, you know, it's peanuts really.
Yeah.
And that's, it's pretty much just a cash grab. If they had some sort of, you know, updates or refreshes, like every, you know, say every year, every other year, every 3 years or whatever, you had to write a new test or something like that to at least say you're somewhat competent, then maybe that's something, but that's.
Yeah. Or even like job experience, right? Like, hey, I've been at this shop and, you know, then the shop's been accredited, but like you said, it's just, that's more of a money grab. Then that's one more thing the shop needs to take, you know, like, yeah. I don't know what the answer would be, but I mean, some sort of certification program would be nice. I mean, even just what you're talking about, it's more or less like a driver's license. It sounds like, where it's like, maybe if you just test it every 10 years, it'd be, it would step in the right direction, you know?
It pretty well kind of is. And I was just, as we were just talking here, I was just thinking, like, you know, when I got my racing license, there's, you know, I've been observed as, it's kind of like an apprenticeship program. So you can apply for your license. You have to go to a school, do some driving, so they can show that you're not going to crash, you're not a weapon out there. Then you can get your license, and you have to be observed so many times in an actual race, then you can get your next license up. So it's kind of, which is kind of the same process. But again, when you start out, there's, you know, nothing saying that you know how to fucking drive in the first place, but you can at least go through the motions. You're at least putting forth the effort to take all those steps to show, hey, I'm interested in this, and you're striving to do better as you go along.
Yeah, striving to do better. That's what's important.
Yeah, there's no really nothing for that except on the, you know, the individual level, or if the shop makes it a mandate there that they attend training or do something.
Yeah, the shop mandates.
Which is kind of what I'm at least trying with ours, with working on towards a slight training program, at least if they show interest in it. But again, that's always down to your individual technicians or apprentices to show the interest, show the drive to want to do better.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard because you put all that in place, and then the consumer just sees a brake job as a brake job as a brake job, you know? And it's like, so how do you translate that to the client? How do you say, hey, look, we're in training, we do these things, we have this accreditation, which means all our techs have this certain license, you know? And it would be a great marketing tactic, right, if you could actually use that to pull away and differentiate yourself from the other shops, the other dealerships, or what have you. But it's just a hard thing to translate, because most people think, well, if an oil change is an oil change, then a brake job is a brake job. And, you know, like, it's like, yeah, the hardest thing to try to like communicate, you know?
Oh yeah. It's always the stuff they don't see anyways. Here's, you know, hand someone a bill for, you know, $3,000. Here's $3,000 for a bunch of parts you'll never ever look at. And they're not going to notice much difference besides the car drives a little better, but they might not even notice the difference between us, you know, having it done at our dealership versus a Joe Blow's garage down the street. If it's up, they're not.
Yeah, as long as it starts and drives and goes down the road and the stupid light is off, you know, that's all they're worried about, you know? And it's like, if they can get that process taken care of for, you know, $2,200 or $3,000, it's like, the consumerism steps in and it's like, oh, well, if I can save $800, I can save $800. It's like, well, it took an extra week and you had to go back three times or whatever. And it's like, it's just so hard to communicate that. Cause for the most part, you know, not for the most part, but more times than not, cars are pretty easy, you know, and the mechanical stuff lasts a long time. And it still blows me away. Like, you ever notice like you miss one small thing and it just like, you know, like automatic transmission is a good point. Like you miss one tiny little check ball and the whole thing burns up. Right. Meanwhile, you get these guys coming and like they put a whole timing belt on or whatever. And it's like missing half the bolts and like the motor mount's held on with one bolt. And then it's like, you drove it in like this, you know, and like, how does somebody else get away with that? And I miss one freaking little thing and the whole thing just like goes up in a ball of flames. Like, oh. I just, it's crazy.
It always seems like, or you leave like one smudge somewhere and you're the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
Just ruined their entire day.
That's a good point too. Whereas
someone else, or someone drove in with, you know, three wheels falling off the car. Or
yeah.
You almost got three Bluetooth wheels and someone just put the tires on and, oh, could you guys just fix that for me? Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, you don't want to go back to the shop you just came from?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want to bother them. They were really nice to me.
Yeah.
Really?
You guys put a smudge on my car, so you're the devil now.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the more you start charging, the more that kind of stuff starts happening, which I can appreciate. You know, like the standards go up, so like you got to raise your standard too. But it's just a good point to bring up because it's true. Like, really, like how do I? Well, how does it seem like everybody else gets away with this stuff, but I can't get away with one little thing that just blows me away, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it comes with, like, diagnostics, too. That's the biggest thing is the freaking diagnostics, because that is, like, the biggest divide when it comes to, like, payment or, like, being compensated, right? Nobody wants to diagnose cars or assess them properly because it doesn't pay. And that's another one where a lot of the time you can just look up the code. You can throw the first three parts that come up on the hotline and usually you're going to encapsulate what the problem is. And the car's fixed. And that whoever made that recommendation is now God because they fixed it the first time, but come to find out it was like they put two parts on there that the car didn't even need. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day for the consumer, it's like, hey, they said what it was going to be. It actually fixed what it was going to be, and the price didn't change from what they told me. Meanwhile, you go through the diagnostic process, and you sell them $400 of advanced assessment, you know, and then you tell them what the problem is, and then it's another bill for another $600. At the end of the day, the bill was $1,000 at both the places, but the shop A gave you that $1,000 quote right off the bat and was able to just throw all these parts in it. I mean, yeah, maybe his GP net sales was only $200 because the rest of it went to parts and the other guy actually made more money, but that's a harder sale to have, you know? Most people don't want to hear, what do you mean it's going to be $400 and that's not even going to fix it? Like, it's so hard. Like, so what's the right thing to do? From a technician standpoint, of course, we want to be able to get in there and encapsulate exactly what it is. But from the business standpoint, it's like, I just want to tell the consumer what the price is one time, fix the car and get paid and like limit, you know, take that transaction and make it as painless as possible. But it's so hard to do that.
Oh yeah, it is. You always seem like you're the asshole for wanting to, you know, spend the actual time on it. Like we had Karen a few weeks ago, I think the person was saying, oh, that sounds like a lot for diagnosis. It was like 3 hours for chasing some parts and which one problem they created. And another one was a bad repair someone else had made before they bought it. And, you know, I had to take my time to get that. And they're like, oh, that sounds like a lot for repair. Well, we didn't break it. Half of it you broke, or Mrs. Customer. And the shithole that you bought the car from broke the other half. So now you've got a working car.
Yeah, then it's fixed. But it's just tough working through that process of like,
oh, yeah.
You know, and I have a lot of other shops that I know of that do that shotgun approach and, you know, you can throw stones at them and it's like, that's not the right way to do it, but they're selling more jobs and they're turning over more cars, even though they're just throwing a bunch of parts at it, you know? and every once in a while one will hang up. Well, they throw three or four parts at it, and then they don't charge them anything, and then they send them somewhere else to actually get it fixed. And it just like it's just so frustrating because like the amount of work and time that we spend like meticulously go through these cars and make sure that we're finding the only problem that there is and like technically go through it and say this is the only component you're going to need to replace. And somehow we look like the bad people because it's like, yeah, it's a process. Oh, well, he said he could fix it. Well, what did he say it was going to be? And it's like, oh, they were going to replace all the oxygen sensors for a fuel trim code. What are you talking about? It's not going to fix it. And it's going to be like $1,000, you know, like what? I don't know. It's so hard. It's the education of the consumers. It's so hard because it's, there's so much. You just can't educate. Everyone comes in with their car one time a year, two times a year at the most. You know, it's like, how are you going to be able to translate that much education to someone on a 1 hour transaction once a year? It's yeah. just. All right. When it comes to like customer delegation, is that something you take head on now as well, moving from the technician more to the manager's position?
How do you mean?
Do you do a lot of like the service advising?
No, like we still have, you know, say our service advisor up front, but I do deal with a lot with, say, advising our advisors as to some of our processes and, you know, what needs to be done.
So just when there's a fire or something like that?
Yeah, pretty good. Got to be a pretty good fireman then here. Maybe this, especially during tire season, which is something you've never experienced, the absolute gong show that is a tire season.
That's true. I actually just learned about that last year. I didn't even, as weird as it is, I didn't even think about it. I mean, I'm in California, so of course I didn't think about it, but it's like, it was not till like last year that I realized it was like, that's a thing. You like store people's tires and then put them back on. Like, that's pretty genius, actually. Like, that makes a lot of sense, but I didn't even think about it.
Oh, it's an absolute shit show, but especially if you don't bother, you know, limiting your appointments and vetting some stuff out, but they can actually get it done. But that's an entirely different world. You probably don't want to experience that.
I don't even know what I could compare it to. I mean, I don't know. Would it be like an express lube or something like that?
I only have to get 13 cars backed up out the door. Everyone wants their tires on 2 days ago because they told them a week and a half ago it was going to snow.
Oh, I can see. That's kind of like our smog program.
Oh, yeah. Usually within like what, 3 days of the tickets or the tags being expired. Oh, I got to get it done right now.
Oh, it's usually already expired, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They got 18 codes that they got to get cleared out.
And it passed last time. So why doesn't it pass now? The other guy I used to take it to, he passed it every time. There was no problem. Okay. Maybe go back there. I don't know. I stopped doing it. I got into the industry. That was my very first like professional, I guess, automotive job was as a smog technician. And I'll never go back. I don't want anything to do with that. So I guess I'd roughly translate it probably over to your guys' tire season. Cause yeah, you'd be backed up 30, 40 a day in smogs, people coming in. I'm already booked for the day. Oh, you're just standing here. You can't do mine. Like, no, I'm not just standing here. You walked into the shop. So I had to stop what I was doing to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm you can't here just do it.
You can't just do it real quick. No, I have all these people sitting here. I got to do real quick, you know, like, oh my God.
Yeah. See the parking lot. They're all ahead of you.
Yeah, and then every time it would fail, it's like they want you, well, what do I need to do? I don't know. Like, I don't know. I need you to just pay so I can do the next one because there's another guy waiting behind you. What do I need to replace? I don't know. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you need to replace. It failed. Go fix it. Being test only, that was a big thing. We didn't do any repairs. It was just like, come in, test it, and then ship them out. And it was, yeah, I'm surprised I stuck in the industry after that. I mean, I think that was like the gauntlet getting thrown at me for sure.
Oh, yeah. like tire season up here is probably where you make like a good 60-70% of your, or can make 60-70% of your money if you're at a bit of a, like a, if you're at a bigger shop, that's where you're making a lot of your money, because a lot of your tires are coming off. Everyone needs your brakes or brake services by then. You're getting a better thorough inspection on it. You can rack up or stack up the hours quite a lot more on your ROs. But.
Nice. I can see that working out pretty good. Then you store the tires too then, right?
Yeah.
Or do you like give them back?
Some people take them back if they've got room for them. A lot of people, if they're living in apartments or they're older, or, you know, just can't be bothered, then they store them with us. Like we've got seven or nine bins, something like that, full of tires. One bin is just full of used car department tires. Actually, a bin and a half is full of used car department tires, and the rest are all full of customer tires. The last dealership, a big dealership I worked at up in Peterborough, they had 12 bins at that time. I think they've added another 4 or 5 since then.
It's a crazy concept.
When you're charging 45 or 50, 60 bucks a season, then you can at least recoup your money and at least recoup the money it's taking you to store those as well.
Right.
And you keep them on sites. The customer just has to show up, the tire's on. So it does make life easier, especially as a tech. You don't have to haul them out of the car, unbag them, blast them off, then rebag the next ones and get them put away. You just have to stuff them outside in our co-ops or apprentices store them at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was wondering what the tire bags were too. I got one of them racks that has like the floor mats and all that. So like the seat covers and like the plastic wrap and the floor mats, and then the bottom it says tire bag. I'm like, tire bags? That's weird. The hell you need tire bags for? I don't do tires. So I asked some of the guys, do you guys like have to put tires in bags before you throw them away? Like, no, they just come pick them up. We just recycle them. I'm like, the hell you need bags for? That would make sense. That's what you get when you get 75 degrees every day through all four seasons. I don't know. You learn something new every day, you know? Yeah. It's just amazing. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good way of retaining clients too. Is like they can't really go anywhere else because you got their tires. So
yeah, they can take them somewhere else and store them. But like everybody seems to offer tire storage around here because it kind of keeps a captive audience.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for your retention, like, you know, these cars are coming in, like, you just know. That's kind of cool. I mean, I like the idea of that too, because it's like a guaranteed, you know, through these months, you got these clients that are coming in because the tires are sitting there on the rack, unless they wreck the car or something. I mean, how many times does that happen where, like, they don't have the car anymore or something happens to it and you just sell the tires to somebody else, I guess?
Not that often, but yeah, they wind up trading the car in, so then those tires don't fit their new car, or they want new tires with their new car, so then we wind up with the old tires and fills up our used car department bin. Those will get sold along with another vehicle if they're still good condition.
Well, that sounds like a pain in the ass. That doesn't sound like great. Hey, you can have those. Oh, thanks. Great.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Or you're like waiting and there's been like 3 years and these tires have still been sitting on the rack and you're like, I haven't seen these guys in a little while. What happened to them?
Better do a health check on them.
Yeah, not a bad idea. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah, crazy stuff from a different world up there. I can only imagine like the salt and the rust. I mean, anything in the rust belt, but moving up into Canada too, it's like, yeah, it's... I'm blessed. Like, I'm just happy.
Yeah.
I got to do good, you know? And for the things I worry about or I whine about, I'm like, every once in a while, an exhaust manifold, you know, it doesn't want to disconnect for me. So I got to, you know, heat it up a little bit, but then it's fine.
Yeah. You probably do that with the propane torch.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. I don't need much. And then they crack them loose. You probably get every one of them. You got to cut them out, drill them out or whatever.
Yeah, here it's usually your torch and motor. You know, I think even at our dealership, we're hard pressed to do an alignment on a 21 or older without breaking the torches out to heat up the jam nuts up front.
Oh my god, is that like a multiplier you put on your labor as well, or is it just like across the board? do you like inspect it first and then, or do you just have like a set year and like anything older than that, we're guaranteed we got to do like a 1.5 or a 2.5 multiplier on it, on the labor times?
No, that's usually kind of a set price on that. Should be probably going over that, see if we can adjust that. But most of that stuff, you know, you're still, you know, half an hour for an alignment. That's all it takes, even if you're breaking out the torches. They live right next to the alignment rack. So.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, once you get it set up and you're used to it. But yeah, because we always take like the inspection time to really go over and like, is this thing lifted? Are we going to run into problems? Is it rusted? I mean, I've had a few from come from out of state, a few Jeeps that needed a frame.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And you're like, needs a what? It's like, it needs a frame. What happened to this thing? That's new to me. So it's like, it's always like interesting. Like, what the hell? But you got to look at it and say, okay, yeah, we need a little more time. The thing's got 44 inch tires. Like, yeah, we got to add a little multiplier on the labor guide here because that's not going to be a standard hour and a half brake job, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just interesting how from different areas of the world, how people look at it and say, hey, we need to, where's our line? How do we draw the line in the sand so that we're not just blanketing everything with a cost increase, but we can kind of, you know, change exactly and pinpoint the repair for each vehicle accordingly.
Yeah. Usually we'll go over like if it needs control arms or, you know, whatever, we can look at it. Here's what our labor guide says, like, yeah, no, and it's rusty. This is rusty. We're going to have to break that, yada, yada. And we adjust accordingly for usually every vehicle. Like before we do an alignment, it's usually already been had another repair done. So
that makes sense
too. Usually move fairly freely.
Yeah. I got to wonder how many cars just end up getting scrapped because it's just too much too. And then the clients are like, I've been driving around for a year like this. What do you mean? It's no, it's not safe. Probably get enough of that.
Oh, I've been driving around. If you drive on the highway, I like, you know, doing 150K. That's not terribly safe, but you can do that too. But as long as no one notices. But
yeah.
The same with all the holes in your frame and your control arms falling off and whatnot. Oh, that's what that clunking was.
You probably get a lot of, because you probably get a lot of trade-ins you got to look over too, right, on like inspections.
Yeah, doing get a lot of, fair amount of safety inspections, but usual, sometimes only very rarely we'll put them up and it's like, yeah, this belongs at the auction or
send it down the road.
Or we don't want our name on this. We don't, this is not a product we want to sell through our dealership that we would be proud to sell.
Does that inspection go before the actual tradesman, or do they just take the car in as a trade-in? They sell the new car, and then whatever happens after that is it's too late.
Yeah, well, if it's someone trading in that's already serviced with it, they'll usually try and look at the service history and, you know, get a ballpark idea of what the condition of the vehicle is, or they'll know, should know ahead of time. But most of the time, it's traded in. They take off, and they're new or new to them car. Then we'll do a safety inspection on the used vehicle. So there's no inspection before sales buys it from the customer or takes it on trade in.
I see. So it's good luck.
It kind of is. Probably should be. Might save them quite a bit, but then you also might lose the sale at the other end. So it's kind of a
might be a good thing if you lose it, though. I mean,
yeah.
Because I always wonder about that too. Guys are always like, I mean, for the most part, I think people are pretty honest. They're like, they get ready to sell a car and they're like, they want to fix everything. I want to make sure like everything's good with this car I'm gonna sell. But if they're gonna trade it in, that's like the famous last words. Just get it good enough so I can get it to the dealership so I can trade it in. And I always wonder on the other side of that is like, oh man, like they should really think about like inspecting these cars before they take it in on a trade in. And then when you're dealing with like with rust and a whole different climate like that, like you just gotta, if it needs a whole frame or something radical like that, it's like you would think there'd be like an inspection process to kind of go both ways, like, hey, we'll give you this much contingent on the fact we're going to do it a quick little inspection. And then because when people are buying a car from a private party, that's what they do, like, hey, can I go take it? Or if you're selling a car, you probably allow them to go take it to an independent repair facility and say, oh yeah, go drive it, take it to a shop, go check it out. Should go both ways, you would think.
Yeah, you would hope so. You're think so, but I'm not at that end of the business, so I don't.
Yeah, on the sales side, I guess the manner of the manner of averages and odds is like, just take it in. Let's just get these new cars moved because they're only giving you pennies on the dollar anyway when it comes to the trade-in as it is.
Yeah, you'd hope they'd usually account for, you know, needing a few thousand bucks worth of reconditioning to get it to a proper sales level, but
that's true. Yeah, it's just they're different, a whole different world when you got to deal with cars that are like that, especially when it comes to the cold. What's weather like up there now?
Right now it's not so bad. I think we just got our first snowfall of the season.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Like yesterday.
Wow.
But it's supposed to rain tomorrow.
That's not terrible.
So we're fairly temperate. It's getting more and more temperate here as the years go on, and I'm kind of okay with that. The older I get, the more I don't like the snow as much. But
well, the dealership's probably set up pretty nice to handle that kind of stuff too, as far as ice and snow and keeping it warm in there for everybody.
Oh yeah, that's the part's not that bad.
Yeah,
the occasional slop. You get slop down the back of your neck. You're working in the wheel well, you're doing brakes, and you get some ice down the back. That's a great feeling. That wakes you up.
I just had a vivid feeling of that. Oh my God, that's terrible. I get like the Chinese water torture when it rains here. So you know, like kind of drips, 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 drips. But I could only imagine getting a snowplow down the back. No, thank you. That might be the end for me. It's like, I'm good. I don't want to do this anymore. That's all it took right there. That's it. I'm done.
There you go.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, well, cool, man. Yeah, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me for listening to me ramble for a while.
What's that?
I appreciate you having me and listen to me ramble for a while.
Oh, yeah. All the way up from Canada.
That's great up here. You should come. Just come in the summer.
Just come in the summer. That's when all the bugs are out. That's when the bugs are all out, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You usually we got snow season and you got bugs. Bug season. That's about it. You got about, 3 weeks in the spring, another 3 weeks in the fall where it's fine. Everywhere else, you're either carried away with bugs or frozen.
Yeah, I just thought it was like once you get to like the border, of the states, it's just like it's all trees and then Alaska.
Yeah.
I don't know anything there. It's all gray to me. I don't know.
Trees, a few million lakes in Alaska. Done.
it's like just nothingness, just hills and trees, a couple of mounties, and then it's Alaska.
Yeah. I was saying, how you doing, eh?
I heard the French fries and gravy is good over there, though, so I'll have to check that out one of these years.
That it is. That's also a way of life.
that's all you get to look forward to, huh?
Wings and a poutine. That keeps you warm in the winter.
That's it. A couple ice cold beers and the French fries and gravy and then that's pretty much it. Yep. In your area, when it comes to do you have a lot of independent shops around your area, or is it all like, I mean, how rural are you?
Our town, the town that I work in, has I want to say like 18,000-20,000 people in the town itself. Then in the county and the area that our dealership kind of serves, you probably get about 40,000 people going either direction.
What kind of radius is that? Like in mileage or, I'm sorry, kilometers?
Canadian miles?
Canadian miles, yeah.
I was trying to think. We probably got a good, 40 kilometers each direction. Not south, obviously, because we're on the lake, but.
So it's a pretty decent sized little town.
Yeah, that's or at community. Least our a community. Yeah, that's our at least our county plus kind of the neighboring counties, townships. The way that all works out. I think in our town itself, we've got our town and the next town over, Port Hope. We have something like 9 new car dealerships.
Wow.
Plus another probably dozen or more small independent car shops or auto shops. So it's like it's a large concentration. I for a small area.
That's kind of crazy because, I mean, that's not much smaller than our county in our area. We're about 35,000 in our city, in our county. Yeah, it's definitely grown a lot bigger than that. But as far as size and everything, it's about the same. But we don't have near that density of repair shops or even dealerships. Oh, we got a lot of dealerships down in San Luis, but off the top of my head, I couldn't quote exactly how many that is. But I know they have to have a certain amount of mileage, you know, from like the Dodge, the Chevy, and they have to be spread out a certain distance from each other. But it seems like a pretty good concentration. I mean, compared to like how many people are in your area, like that's when I'm wrapping my head around. It's like, it doesn't seem like there's that many people to need that high a concentration of auto repair shops. But yeah, I guess with the tires and everything.
Yeah. And with the, I guess, rural area as well, you're drawing those people in.
Oh, but, I see.
Yeah. But it is a fairly large concentration. The more I think of it, it's like, it just seems normal to me because it's always been like this. But when you think of it, it's like, man, that is a lot of flipping car dealers literally within spit distance of each other.
And no one's fighting for work. Everyone's busy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everyone's,
that's interesting.
Everyone's busy enough.
So you probably don't have like on the outliers of the city or the city limits. There's probably not a big township that's closer by.
Not really. Cause, even where I live about 20 minutes just outside of Coburg in the next, you know, small little town or a town. And I think there's like 4 independent car repair places here to a population of a couple thousand.
Wow.
And you get that there's 2 auto repair shops in the borough or village in between Coburg and Colburn as well. That's again, maybe a couple thousand people in that area and a car dealership. A used car dealer. Then you get into Coburg where you got, you know, our 9 dealerships plus some outlying shops in the area, probably at least a dozen or more independent shops. But everyone seems to be keeping busy.
That's crazy. And you have the regulation to be certified too. So you would think that would pull back on, you know, how many qualified technicians there would be. You know, it's pretty interesting because we have a pretty good population and we have a pretty, I think for us is the zoning, you know, because there's not a lot of buildings or like facilities that are zoned by the cities to allow auto repair. So I think that's the big thing around for us is like, if you find a shop or someone that will zone you for auto repair, like you just stay there, like you're not buying something and you're definitely not building something. And a lot of the commercials being rezoned to get out of the commercial zoning and do retail only, especially for us, because we're all wine and everyone wants a winery and a freaking brewery and a distillery. Like, I guess around here, people can't drink enough.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want oil leaking everywhere or air guns going off.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, it's like no one uses air guns anymore. And for the most part, it's like the county's up your ass so far about trying to keep it clean. Like, you can't really get away with digging a pit out back anymore either. So I just think there's more going on politically as far as, you know, wanting the liquor licenses and wanting people to come in and get a DUI. And that's great revenue for the city, you know.
way more kickbacks for that.
Yeah, like what? If you don't think so, then why are you having 15 different wineries one after another? Like, what do you think people do? Like, they're drinking at all these places and then they're driving home. Like, come on, put 2 and 2 together, you know? It doesn't make any damn sense to me, but that's just like a whole political thing that it's like, I don't get that at all, you know? And to have that concentration of auto repair shops you're talking about in your area and the lack of it here, it just kind of like more proves in my own mind of like, yeah, there's definitely something going on as far as the city wanting to push all the auto repair shops to the very edge of town. And like, it just don't make any damn sense. Everyone's going to drive electric cars. No, I don't think so. That's not going to happen. These gasoline cars are going to be on the road for a very long time and someone needs to be there to fix them. So yeah, it don't make any sense. Getting to the government stuff. We talk about this for hours.
Man.
Well, cool, man. This has been fun.
It has been.
Yeah, some good information. Appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me on.